every government entity, every broadband provider has to pay the competitive rate. You know, the people are saying, oh, wouldn't it be horrible if there's a two-tier internet? There is. Everybody knows there's a dial-up, there's broadband, there's different speeds. And so people pay for the speed that they get.
For the user, right?
Yes.
Okay, but I think what Lauren's point is that for the actual website itself, I mean, I have a website, RadioInsideScoop.com. Both of you have websites. Anyone can get any website, and it doesn't cost more for me to reach one website than another. Would the bill that you support change that?
Well, what I'm asking is, why should a website owner get treated better than every consumer and every other business in America? What makes websites so special that they're the only one that wouldn't pay a competitive rate for the internet? I just don't understand why net neutrality is for everybody if it gives some special treatment.
Let me back up, because I think that both of you are very sophisticated, and I think, frankly, the basic question gets lost here. One of the things I frankly don't understand is the current regulation. You know, every time you look at a bill in Congress, the question is, what do we have now versus what we're changing? Now, my understanding is the FCC chairman supports what Lauren calls internet neutrality, this idea that you can't charge a premium to Google or AOL or something to have their website show up on the Verizon network, the Comcast network. Is that the law? Is it an executive order? What is the regulation right now?
Let me explain how the history of it occurred.
Okay.
The internet was commercialized 15 years ago, and on the telephone network, there were some type of rules called Computer 3 rules at the FCC that somewhat regulated the price, terms, and conditions of internet access. Then over time, cable modems came along, Wi-Fi came along, satellite broadband came along. They did not have net neutrality. Net neutrality was a principle that was only on the phone system, and then over time, that was, because there was competition, that rule went away, and that rule has now been upheld by the Supreme Court. So right now, everybody wants to say that net neutrality, everybody has. Nobody has net neutrality. They've never had it on cable modems. They've never had it on free Wi-Fi. And they haven't had it for the last 9 months on telephone networks. And nothing's bad has happened.
Let me ask Lauren, do we have net neutrality now?
I think to an extent you do. I mean, to a certain extent, I agree with Scott. I would say, you know, the FCC made a bad ruling when they dropped provisions that would insist upon net neutrality. The Supreme Court went along with it. And that's why we're talking about net neutrality right now. It's interesting to me that the companies, I read a number of different execs today. They say, you know what, we wouldn't violate the principle of net neutrality. We would never treat content providers differently. That would be bad business. Our customers wouldn't like that. We wouldn't do it. But don't codify it. Don't put it into law. And so why didn't we hear about net neutrality before now? Well, it's because the FCC's ruling is going to expire in 3 months, and so they're gearing up to be able to do this. And they want not to have Congress address the issue. But the truth of the matter is net neutrality has been part of our telecommunications policy from the earliest days.
Now, what, Scott?
And I mean, when I say net neutrality, I'm not talking about the internet per se, but for instance, telephone calls, as he mentioned. This is interesting. Could you imagine if some calls from some people were treated with a different preference than calls from other people, or some places were easier to call?
Well, Scott, let me ask you that. I mean, we have telephone lines that are all across the nation. Some are put up by the government. I guess some are put up by AT&T, but they are a network, and I can call anywhere in the country, heck, anywhere in the world, and I just pay my phone company for the call, but the phone company doesn't charge me more to call a competitor. I mean, I would think the phone company, if I'm using Verizon, doesn't want me to call Cavalier Telephone, and so they could say, sorry, you can't reach that phone number, and I think most of us would agree that that would be a bad thing. How is this different?
Well, it's a red herring. Everybody's saying, wouldn't it be terrible if all of these bad things happened? And everybody agrees. The companies are saying, we don't want to do that either. This isn't a debate over goals. It's a debate over means. And what where the difference would be is that I think that net competition folks want competition, essentially the free market and consumers choosing among choices to drive how the internet develops. A consumer-driven, market-driven internet. And what net neutrality would require is the government to come in and decide many of these things for consumers.
See, that sounds well and good to me, but I can think back to the time of the Betamax and the VHS. And there was competition, and some suggested that that was the best way to have a VCR. Some suggested the other way. But consumers found that actually it's good to have one network. I mean, when you have a phone system, if I'm calling on one phone network and someone's calling another phone network, we can actually talk to each other. I can use any internet provider and reach anywhere on the internet. And that's, you know, we all have streets that we all can drive on. There are standardized lengths for cars and so forth. Why isn't the internet like the telephone system, the highway system, in that it should be a place where we all can drive on, we all have equal access to, we can all go anywhere, we just have to get in the car and drive? Would the COPE Act change that in your view? And then I'm going to ask you, Lauren.
Well, what people are trying to say is there's only one internet. Really, the internet is, we all agree to use internet protocol, so we all speak the same language. But the internet is interconnected networks. That's where the word comes. They're all private, and there are many different technologies, and the only way they work together is everybody uses the same language. It isn't like a highway system. You have to think of it as like the entire transportation system. There are some airplanes, there are some helicopters, there are some people that are walking where there aren't highways. It is not a simple highway metaphor. It is a competition between all modes of conceivable transportation.
Would the COPE Act how would the COPE Act change that?
Well, actually, the COPE Act really doesn't do much. It would be status quo, and that's, I think, what you object to.
Well, Lauren?
That's right. I do want to make one point. I mean, and companies, in some cases, the heads of some of these large telecommunications companies have been very transparent. I mean, they have said that they want to charge, you know, content providers, people with websites, and customers for bringing each other together. The internet was developed with public dollars, taxpayer dollars. And so, sure, you'll hear telecommunications companies say, we need to recoup our investment in the infrastructure. But, you know, the profit margins of telecommunications companies are usually in the top 10 of industries, and they, you know, they're not poor. It was this idea that came to them that they should be able to do this, charge customers and charge content providers. And let me just give you an example of something that Common Cause, because Common Cause, you know, we're a nonpartisan organization. We care about people having access to information, good information, diverse points of view. You know, candidates more and more are using the internet to conduct their campaigns. They're doing streaming video. They're doing all sorts of different types of ways to engage potential voters. And what if, you know, AT&T or Verizon were going to charge candidates? So only candidates that could afford to pay the telecommunications company would be able to use such services as streaming video if they could only afford it.
Lauren, would the COPE Act allow this to occur?
Right now, we are very unhappy, as Scott said, with, you know, we're on the other side. The COPE Act right now doesn't really address his very, very, you know, sloppy, loose provisions in terms of how it protects net neutrality. There is a bill out there in the House, the Markey bill, that we feel much more comfortable with.
I believe it's an amendment to the COPE Act.
Well, the amendment failed in committee, but this is
okay.
A separate bill.
Also
in the Senate, Senator Snow and Dorgan are introducing a bill that...
And that would institutionalize net neutrality.
Yes, it would. Just take us back to where we were. Let's just make that clear. The FCC dropped this out. That's why it didn't happen before. And this would just take us back to where we were. It'd be a level playing field.
And in 30 seconds, if you can, define internet neutrality. Or try maybe a minute. I'll give Scott the same opportunity. What is internet neutrality? I don't know anything about it. What is it?
It's gaining ground as a buzzword. It is the basic democratic operating principle of the internet that all content providers are treated the same.
All content providers are treated the same, meaning that if I sign up using Verizon, I don't get Verizon's website any faster than I get any other website.
And
everyone sort of comes in, and whoever makes it through the pipe first
and
wins.
You can use those pipes to access any services you want. If you want voice over internet protocol, if you want Vonage, if you want Skype, that the telecommunications company can't dictate to you what services you use via your connection or, you know, discriminate against various content providers.
Scott, do you agree with Lauren's definition of internet neutrality, yes or no, and then why are you against it?
Well, I think, you know, she defines it from her perspective. I would define it from our perspective in that net neutrality is the government dictating the prices, terms, and connections or conditions of the internet. And so it's really the difference between net competition, which the best way to have a free and open internet is free and open competition. not more government control. Because one of the things that hasn't come up here is that in order to implement and enforce net neutrality, there would have to be a lot of government monitoring and surveillance of internet traffic in order to ensure that people weren't treated unfairly.
Well, let's say that, use the telephone example, because I think that's also something that was created both by the government and by private industry. Let's say that I'm fined that using Sprint, I can't get through to Verizon or vice versa. I don't mean to attack any specific company. I would be able to complain to the FCC and say, hey, Sprint is getting me into Sprint, but they're not getting me into competitor because I want, I assume on the internet, if I'm using one service and I try to find out the rates of another service and they won't let me through, under the principle of internet neutrality, I could complain. But if I don't have internet neutrality, correct me if I'm wrong, but Verizon could say, we're not going to show you the other sites.
But the beauty of competition is if a provider does not take care of a consumer, that consumer can walk. And so what we're talking about is government the best guard of whether or not you get everything you want, or the free marketplace where supply and demand and an unsatisfied customer. If one of these companies did those things that people are afraid of, customers would leave in droves. It would be bad business to do those things.
We're going to take a break. I'll get you a response in a second. Lauren, I also want you folks to join in as well. Whether you understand the issue or not, we have two experts here from very differing views who can help explain it to you. We want you to call in with your questions. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and we'll be right back right after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
No, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened star.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Who should control the internet? Should it be the government? Should it be private corporations? Should it be the free market and let competition go where it is? Or should the government regulate it to make sure that everyone has access to every site and there's non-discrimination among the sites? My guests are Lauren Coletta, sitting to my immediate right. She's the media director for Common Cause. She supports internet neutrality, this principle of government regulation to make sure that everyone has equal access. And then sitting to her right is Scott Cleland, the chairman of netcompetition.org. And he says, let the free market do what it does. Everything will be fine. Let me go to Lauren. Why shouldn't the free market, fair competition, why can't they handle this?
Well, I would say that, you know, the development of the internet is a really unique step forward in human communications. It's very important. Never before have we been able to communicate in this way. If you think about it, there are 75,000 new bloggers every day with a voice that they haven't had before that is made available around the world. And so, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, folks that represent the interests of the large telecommunications, they say, you know, let competition rule. I say, yes, let competition rule, but let the innovation be the competition between my blog and your blog, my website and your website. Don't let the internet service providers discriminate between us. Don't let them make yours better because you pay them more.
Scott, people complain a lot today, and I hear it on the left and the right. You have liberals complaining about the Fox propaganda channel, the Republican propaganda news channel. You have Republicans claim about the liberal media. And the complaints, I think, wherever they come from, stem from the idea that we don't all have access to CBS News or ABC or Fox, or we don't all have our own TV stations, our own voice. And the internet has provided anybody with a good idea with the chance to do their blog. What, under your principle, which would be not internet neutrality, would prevent AT&T from saying, you know what, I don't like that person. They're complaining about AT&T on their blog. If you use AT&T to sign up, we just won't give you access to their website.
Well, I think there's you're mixing up is that somehow there's this magical rule that has protected and made everything on the internet good. What has been at work is, you know, the internet was commercialized and hasn't been regulated by the government for 15 years. It's not broken. It doesn't need fixing. It is flourishing. 75,000 new bloggers. What you have is you have all sorts of new people coming in with different technologies. The internet is an incredibly vibrant and diverse force. And underneath it all is the competition, people fighting for each other's eyeballs, and bloggers like everybody else, websites like everybody else, consumers, governments, and businesses have to pay the competitive rate. And so what I'm kind of surprised at is, you know, why, if consumers have been doing just fine on the internet with dial-up or different prices of broadband, if consumers, every one of Americans, have been able to do just fine and they've all been able to get more on the internet and have more options, why can't websites and bloggers live with the situation that everybody else does and everybody else is flourishing under?
Scott, let me just press you with my direct question, because there's a lot of issues with internet neutrality. Would you support a law that merely did this, that simply said that if you use AT&T or Verizon to sign on to the internet, that they cannot censor what you look at on the internet? In other words, if people are unhappy with Verizon, Verizon can't prevent me from going to websites that are anti-Verizon. Would you support a law that simply said, I can go wherever I want, and Verizon will take me there?
Absolutely not, because I know Congress in 1996 passed a law that said we want to block access to indecent sites for children. They have a section that says we want to prevent online predators. So there are lots and lots of reasons why you might want to block. Parents wanting to control bad content getting to their children. We want to control spam. We want to control viruses. There are a lot of very bad things that happen on the internet, and in order to protect people from those, there needs to be some intervention and some blocking. And so a rule that would say anything goes, I think, would be a terrible idea.
So who, but in your view, it's the corporations themselves, not the government, that should make those rules?
Well, I think what you're finding is that the marketplace is sorting out a lot of this. It's figuring out ways to get spam not to go through and viruses. So market responses are doing there. I think you're seeing a lot of corporations giving people, parents, filtering technologies. So it's a marketplace solution to try and help parents keep bad things away from their children.
But can't we use these market solutions to you know, use filtering technologies and so forth? But still, what about my concern? AT&T blocking anti-AT&T propaganda. I mean, China blocks anti-China propaganda. I don't want AT&T blocking people who are opposed to AT&T. Well, no disrespect to AT&T.
Well, I think there's disrespect to AT&T and every broadband provider that linking them to the China example. That doesn't happen in America, and there's a very low tolerance for that type of behavior. And so I think it's a red herring of saying that horrible thing might happen because it's not happening, and there's not an economic incentive or a behavioral incentive for it to happen.
Lauren, why isn't it happening happening it now, and could it happen in the future?
You know, I think you've seen some isolated incidences where it has happened. There was a cable company, I think, in Canada who had workers on strike, and the workers had a website, and they were blocking access to that website. I don't know the details of that. I understand the FCC is investigating it, that it is an issue. I know, too, some colleagues of mine, and this is a little bit different issue, but it gives you an idea of what kind of power a company could have. You know, this has to deal with AOL. They wanted to start charging for priority emails. In other words, if you paid more for your email, you could make sure it evaded certain filters and it would get there more, you know, in a more quicker way. And we felt that this violated the principle of net neutrality. And so AOL has been accused, and this is widely, you know, it's been reported in the New York Times by ABC and so forth, that emails that traveled over AOL from between AOL customers that had the subject line, Dear AOL, which was the name of the campaign, were blocked for a period of time. And so, you know, you could, you know, as, you know, gatekeepers, certainly, you know, I agree with Scott, there, you know, filters to block content that is harmful to children. I mean, these kinds of things need to happen. But that's a little bit different issue than people who provide the broadband networks.
Well, let me ask you this. What is the current legal structure? The FCC basically has said there is net neutrality, but that's going to expire in 3 months?
Yes.
When did they say that there has to be net neutrality?
Well, it was undoing of what had already been in place. And, you know, Scott had said that it applied to telecommunications. There was a ruling that the Supreme Court did that supported that. And, you know, Scott could speak better to the details than I could. But, you know, each carrier, whether you're the networks were neutral and they were trying to consider whether or not the networks had to share their pipes with one another, and they don't anymore because of the Brand X ruling. It's a Supreme Court ruling. I don't want to get too much in the weeds because I'll get lost.
It's interesting.
But right now
it's
3 months, is my understanding, before it expires. And that's, again, it's why we're having this conversation right now. And, you know, what I don't get, and I'd like to put the question to Scott, is on one hand the telecommunications companies are saying we're not going to do this, it's bad business. And on the other hand, they're saying we need to do this and it's competition and why should content providers be? So there seems to be,
Why can't the telecommunications providers who claim that they don't want to do this anyway, it's bad business, why don't they say, fine, we don't want to do this anyway, work with Common Cause and find regulations that you all can agree with and put them in there, and it's sort of like, you know, good fences make good neighbors. So Common Cause is worried about an abuse of the system. The telephone companies say, we won't abuse it in the way that this Canadian company or AOL appears to have done. We don't want to abuse it. You don't want us to abuse it. We'll agree. We'll sit down. We'll come together with a common set of principles. Why not?
Well, that's because it's assuming that regulation is the answer, and I don't think it is. Because there's a real slippery slope. Once you start regulating a little, it's the camel's nose under a tent, and then you've got a real big problem. Let me address those incidents. She's mentioning that there have been a couple of violations. That's out of literally tens of millions of connections and billions and billions upon billions of people accessing the Internet. There have been a couple of problems. And if we're going to regulate based on, like, one part per billion, what that means is we're essentially going to say we assume that these companies are guilty until proven innocent. We must throw them into regulatory jail before they do something bad.
But the regulatory jail exists now, right? Isn't the reason why they're not doing it is because the FCC will punish them if they do it?
They're not in regulatory jail right now. And you know, that's one of the misnomers is that, you know, the reason why the Internet behaves in the way it behaves is because everybody uses the same protocol. They speak the same language. They all use the same way to find everybody, the World Wide Web. And that's what brings people together. And then all the other technologies and companies are competing in order to satisfy customers. It isn't the principle of net neutrality that makes the world a wonderful place. It's the things I was mentioning.
It's right now, for the next 3 months or so, the net neutrality provisions are in place. And you know, they will fade after that, and then we'll be talking about this issue. And it just seems disingenuous. On one hand, you know, to have some of these execs out there saying, nobody gets a ride on my pipes for free, but I'm already charging the consumer and I want to charge the content provider. And on the other hand, you know, others in the company will say, we would never do that. That would be the wrong thing to do. Our customers would hate that. And then to turn around again and say, but we need to do that because this is competition and do we want government to regulate it? And so it's just really a very mixed message for me.
Real quick, and then we have to go to a break.
This is a clash between worldviews of whether or not the government can create the best outcomes or whether the marketplace. Neither one is perfect, and so you can point to the imperfections in each. But generally, market forces, they grow the economy, they create jobs, they create investment, they reward innovation, they punish poor products and poor services. The marketplace works better. Is it perfect? No. But vastly better than governments, government bureaucrats in Washington trying to manage the marketplace.
There's a lot of rhetoric here, and we're going to address all of it after the break. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Who should control the Internet? Back after this.
Mr. DeBruzzo, I'm Ed McMahon, and we're signing up people for...
Yes, I am.
Mr. Murphy, Ed McMahon. We're starting up... No.
Dreams really do come true.
Ed McMahon, see.
Ed McMahon.
Yes, Ed McMahon. We're having our first ever... Yes. Tuesday night at the high school. We're starting up the Neighborhood Watch in this area, and here's all the information.
Stevie! Get down here, please.
No, he's just here. It's just five, six, seven, eight. No tango, Danelle. Neighborhood watch.
We're having this neighborhood watch, the first one.
Right. Jerry, put some pants on.
I'll come back.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Start a neighborhood watch. It's just one of the many ways you can help make America stronger. To find out how, call or log on for this free guide.
When I was young, my dad always told me to dream big and dream often.
My mom and dad were always my biggest cheerleaders.
I've been very fortunate to have parents that care, but some kids aren't so lucky.
That's why the Major League Baseball players trust for children.
Same with Volunteers of America, to help kids everywhere.
For more than 100 years, Volunteers of America has helped children, families, and many others rebuild their lives.
Our Share With A Child partnership wants you to give kids your time, guidance, and support.
Let's work together to give every child a chance. Find out how you can help a child dream big.
Call 1-800-899-0089 or visit volunteersofamerica.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. There was a time in America when there were various train companies all across the country. There was, I don't remember all the names. I wasn't around then, but the Penn Central and the L&N Railroad and all these different railroads across the country. And if you wanted to go from New York to California, you might have to go on three or four or five different railroads, and they'd all have differing fees and different structures. There was a time in America when telephones first started, when there were various networks and you couldn't get through to everyone. Today, that's pretty much standardized, our highways, our telephones. But in the Internet, interestingly enough, has also been created by this weird mix of the government and private corporations. And today, you can go using one site and go to any site on the Internet, and they can't charge you more, and they can't keep out your emails, and they can't keep you from looking at certain political sites. But the companies say, why shouldn't we? We are the companies. We're the free market. We should be able to say, if we want to, heck, you're using our network. We're going to charge you more if you want to look at a rival network. Who should regulate the Internet? My guest to my right is Lauren Coletta. She's the media director for Common Cause. She supports Internet neutrality. And Scott Cleland, chair of netcompetition.org, who supports the COPE Act, which would largely, as I understand it, end Internet neutrality. Lauren, you were trying to say something before the break.
Oh, and I just want to be clear about the COPE Act. There's a lot of different elements of telecommunications policy in that bill. Common Cause feels that overall it's a bad bill for citizens. It's a bad bill for the public interest. The net neutrality provision in there is very, very weak, and so we support the Markey bill because it has a much stronger provision. And, you know, basically the question, as it boils down, that Scott and I disagree about is, you know, do telecommunications companies have the authority to privatize the Internet? Do we want a walled system where companies that bring the Internet to your house via broadband and DSL, do they have the right to charge content providers that you go to? Now, I just pose this question. If these companies start charging content providers, websites, who do you think they're going to pass on those costs to? Do we want a pay-as-you-go Internet system where it costs money to visit these sites and access? Sure, you're going to access services and buy products, and that's what competition's all about, I think, in a general way. But do we want companies to privatize the Internet, or is it going to be, you know, like it is today?
Scott, wouldn't the ending of Internet neutrality, to the extent it exists on the FCC regime, wouldn't that just end up in taking a lot of money from consumers' pockets and handing it over to telecommunications companies?
No, there's a couple of misconceptions. You were talking about the COPE Act. Net neutrality doesn't exist now. She would like to have happen, and the net neutrality proponents would like to have happen, is Congress to pass the law to reinstate it. Net neutrality is not around now.
To be clear, the FCC did it outside of legislation. They did it by government regulation. The Supreme Court said, I'm sorry, if you want this, it's got to be done through legislation.
No, what they did was is said it was when there was monopoly, when there wasn't competition, it was a safeguard to protect people because there wasn't competitive choice. The FCC said, I'm sorry, there now is competitive choice, so therefore we do not need that government regulation because consumers have choice. And so it was the evolution of competition and the change in the facts on the ground where the FCC and the Department of Justice findings of fact and the Supreme Court upheld it of saying, yeah, we have competition now and we don't need these old monopoly regulations of the past.
The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Mike in Fairfax. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me on. I want to address something Scott said earlier, that we're supposed to trust Verizon, and here in Fairfax we have Verizon and Comcast, the only real high-speed Internet. Aren't these the same two companies who just turned over all my call records to the NSA?
Verizon did. I don't know that Comcast did, but
But you're asking me to trust the people who are spying on us, right?
Well, you know, let me respond to, you know, our founding fathers were very concerned about liberty being abridged, and what the Constitution did is it protected us from government. Now, you know, there are constitutional protections. There's a constitutional process. It will work out whether or not those whether the appropriate rules were followed. But what I'm trying to say is that a competitive free market, there is more diffusion of power, which protects Americans' privacy and liberty, because the greatest threat to Americans' liberty is concentrated power in a government and government monitoring of the Internet through net neutrality.
Well, Scott, I agree with you that too much government concentration is a danger, but I also think too much corporate concentration is a danger. This country in 1886 started the Sherman Antitrust Act, which broke up monopolies like Standard Trust Oil and, frankly, broke up AT&T just 20 years ago, I guess it is now, to promote more competition. I have an economics degree from Harvard, so I know economics. I'm not sure I understand the Internet. But I know that if you have lots and lots of providers, if you have farmers, they can't really fix prices very well. But if you have a system like a telephone system, or I would argue the Internet is similar to that, where Comcast, let me just give the caller mentioned Comcast. Right now, I can only get Comcast in Alexandria. That's the only cable company I can get. And my cable rates go through the roof. And I know why they go through the roof. They go through the roof because there's no competition, because there's only one cable line leading to my house. And I remember, I think it's 15 years ago now, when under George Bush Sr., Congress passed a bill to open up cable companies to more competition. It never happened.
Yes, it did. And over 25 million Americans have availed themselves of the competition. It's called DirecTV, and it's called Dish. 25 million Americans over the last decade have said bye-bye to their cable company. Competition works. We're not talking about a few people. We're talking about over a quarter of Americans have gone and availed themselves of that competitive opportunity. Now, let's talk about a couple of other concentration. The people that are asking for this net neutrality. Microsoft has 90% share of its market. The search engine market, the top three companies have 90% share. Google has 50% of the search market. And the chip market, Intel, which is also backing, has over 90% of that market. So the concentrations, there are unregulated markets that have high concentrations. The telecommunications industry is becoming increasingly competitive very rapidly.
To be fair, I supported breaking up Microsoft as well, so I'm for antitrust wherever it is. Lauren, you've been chomping at the bit. Go right ahead.
Common Cause did a report called The Unintended Consequences of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, and it really took a look back, 10 years ago, which is a century in terms of how quickly the Internet has developed, about, what the large companies were saying would happen. They said, if you let us deregulate, you're going to have more competition, more jobs, lower rates. Everybody knows what happened to their cable rate across the country. There are fewer
jobs. Mine doubled in the last 5 years.
You have consolidation. You have consolidation in newsrooms where they're having fewer number of reporters, fewer numbers of people working in the newsrooms, which is bad. We care about this. Common Cause cares about this because then you have less people looking at the world and telling us what's happening.
I have another caller on the line. Ed from Vienna, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, they're talking about competition. Well, surely, when you make a telephone call, I can call to anybody, and when I call to them, they don't have to pay for the content. I connect to them, I talk to them, and that's it. And when I make a call over the internet, I just merely call somebody. I shouldn't have to be made pay for the content, and neither should the person at the other end be able to pay for the content, because you don't have to pay for content on a telephone call.
Ed, thank you for your comment. Scott, how do you address that?
Well, let's cut right to the chase. I don't think any of these companies are planning to have to I don't think they are going to do what you're talking
about.
But
you support their right to do exactly that.
Because there are lots of good things that freedom will create. Why shouldn't somebody have the freedom to treat people differently, just like search engines, remember, or radio or broadcast TV? What do those three things have in common? They give away a service for free, and it's paid for by advertising.
Except that radio and TV are one way. I mean, when I turn on the radio or the TV, I get to choose what channel I get, but they only talk to me. I can't talk back. But the Internet's more like a phone, isn't it? It's both ways.
But the thing is that search is two-way as well. And what the point is that why do you want to restrict ability of companies to offer new business models that'll lower the cost to consumers? Because if somebody comes along and says, I don't want to do net neutrality, I would like to be able to offer free broadband service with free phone calls to people if they're willing to pay for ads or some hybrid between. Why would we want the government preventing options which allow the consumer's bill to go down?
Well, Lauren, under net neutrality, they could still do that, couldn't they? Couldn't they still say if you pay a certain number of ads, we'll give you cheaper broadband service?
I imagine they could work out an arrangement like that. But it's really, I just have trouble thinking through how it could result in lower costs for consumers if large companies are charging the consumer and the website and content provider, because I can only imagine a scenario where the website provider, who's paying these companies money they didn't have to pay before, will try to recoup their costs, and that wouldn't be passed on to the consumer.
It's paid by advertisers. How do you think we get free TV, free radio?
We have that model right now. There's the web, the business model on the web for advertisement is taking off. Companies are moving their ad dollars toward the web. The people who own the pipes, the AT&T, they're not getting that money. It's the content providers that are getting that money right now.
But why shouldn't broadband providers, to be able to lower the cost potentially of phone service or high-speed service, be able to offer advertising? And if they offered advertising, then net neutrality people would say, oh, wait a minute, that's unfair. That's not balanced.
They could offer advertising and give someone a cheaper rate to call in. But the question, it seems to me, is not a cheaper rate for various customers, but the question of, can they make yours go faster? Can they say, all right, you support us, you go fast, you rival, we're going to send your stuff really slow.
There's a real misunderstanding of what competition produces. Competition does not produce five types of DSL or five types of cable modem that are all the same in all ways and all the same price. competition and markets, by its purpose, create a variety of choices. People find new niches, underserved markets. And so what competition does is give you a diversity of plans, prices, and programs.
Now you're talking in general about competition, but I wonder in this specific case if prices would go up. Lauren?
I don't really understand the model that he's talking about, to be honest with you. It doesn't make sense to me. But I will say that in terms of competition, and I might be a few percentage points off, but I think it's 53% of the only 53% of Americans have a choice, a real choice, like between DSL or cable. And the rest of the folks, they either have, you know, one choice or none. And in parts of the country where they just have one choice, you can bet they're paying a lot more because there's not a lot of competition. Now, and then in terms of competition, you know, you talked about breaking up the AT&T. Well, media is becoming more and more, these companies are becoming more and more concentrated with AT&T buying out SBC. And, you know, I think that you see that model becoming even more concentrated. That's the trend that's going on right now. So, you know, I don't.
In other words, competition is okay when you've got hundreds of providers, but if you've only got three or four and one serving 53%, then they can charge monopoly
that
prices.
That most people don't have access. At least half of the people don't have access to a choice.
Is that true, Scott? People only have one choice?
It's not that low, but the important thing is directionally, where is it going? Like if we said versus a year ago, what's that percentage? That percentage has gone up a lot over the last year, over the last 2 years, last 3 years. It's skyrocketed. Next year, it's going to go up even more. Is the marketplace is very rapidly getting competitive alternatives to people. And if you went with net neutrality, what incentive would that be for that to continue? It would stop.
We have to take another break. But when we come back, I want to talk about the government's role. The government helped form the internet to begin with. Shouldn't it have a right to regulate it? And what have other governments in other countries done about this? Your calls as well, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish.
If you give someone a fish.
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Hey, mister, studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
No, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened start.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's been a fascinating discussion this hour about something that affects you that you probably don't even know that's going on. Heck, I admit I didn't really follow it until preparing for this show. But I have two experts on the issue, and it's the issue of what some call internet neutrality, whether corporations should be able to charge you for going to a competitor's website, maybe give people who do advertising with them a special break, let them go faster, maybe even regulate emails. You know, on your phone system, if you have cell phones, if I'm a Sprint customer, and I'm not, this is just an example, I don't know that Sprint does this, but I know there are companies where if I'm a Sprint customer, I can call other Sprint customers, no charge. But if I want to call another customer, Heck, there is a charge. What about emails? How about free emails to people if you're on AOL, saying AOL, but they're going to charge you if you go to Yahoo or Hotmail. Where does it stop? My guests are, to my right, is Lauren Coletta. She's the media director for Common Cause. She supports internet neutrality. And then to her right is Scott Cleland, the chairman of netcompetition.org. Scott, let me start with you. The government helped develop the internet. The old joke is, you know, Al Gore said he played a role, but he did play a role. Whether he created it or not, the government played a major role. This began as a way for defense to talk to each other in case of nuclear meltdown in setting up the structure, just like the government's played a role in just about every network, whether it's telephone, transportation network that exists in this country. You know, sometimes when I think about pharmaceutical companies, I think if government helped for the research, they need to give back on the other end and make it cheaper. Don't you think that since government has helped, that they have their finger in the pie and they have a right to regulate?
No. You know, this was originally created as an academic consortium that helped the Defense Department. And 15 years ago, the decision was to not have the National Science Foundation fund the operation of the backbone of the Internet, but to privatize it. And when did we hear about the Internet? And when did it grow? When did it become diverse? When did it do all the positive things to help all of our lives? It was when the government let go of it and let the market forces flourish. That's where the growth, that's where the dissemination come. It was not a government program.
Lauren, does this guy have a point? I mean, I didn't hear about the Internet until 15 years ago when we got the World Wide Web. Maybe privatizing is a solution.
There was a campaign. People remember, you know, get ready for the information superhighway, where the public was invited to do this. But 70% of the content on the Internet is produced by individuals like you and I. It's not that the corporations came along and saved the day and now the Internet is this wonderful, fruitful thing. Most of the traffic on the Internet is peer-to-peer. And, you know, so to say that that the companies came and saved the day and that it's commercialized and that's why the Internet has thrived, it's not.
It's so about, it's neither government nor corporations, but individuals.
That's right.
That's the way my show is. Let me ask you this, because the COPE Act doesn't just affect Internet neutrality. And I understand there's some disagreement as to what the current regime is now. Lauren makes the point that because of the FCC rulings, there's been Internet neutrality in a number of networks. Scott makes the point that on cable modems, in fact, there was no Internet neutrality. So we disagree sort of on what exists now. But in the future, one of the things that the COPE Act does is it takes away some of the government requirements. For example, cable, right? One of the things that the government set up is if you want to have this semi-monopoly power, you got to show C-SPAN. You got to have public access stations like Channel 10. You've got to allow the public to have a pipeline into it. And one of the things the COPE Act, I know the management of this station fears, is it would shut down this kind of public service. So that's, I don't know if that's separate from Internet neutrality, but is that a problem you folks have with the bill, or is that something where that's just a separate issue for you?
I think it's a separate issue from what we do on netcompetition.org.
Okay. So the Markey Amendment would fix Internet neutrality, but it wouldn't fix that other part of the bill.
No, and I think that's an important element of the bill. It's something that Common Cause is concerned about, because oftentimes the local cable access stations are one of the only places that broadcast, you know, town hall meetings, school board meetings, and that local groups can get on the air and get their point of view out. So it's a very powerful tool. And local governments care about it because they want to protect their rights of way issues. They don't want anybody who gets, if the national franchise piece goes through, to be able to put up an infrastructure on top of their public infrastructure without having a say-so and getting remuneration.
So to be clear, that's a reason to be against the Barton COPE Act, totally apart from the issue of Internet neutrality. You can support Scott's position and be support the end of this principle of neutrality and allow competition to reign and still not want the COPE Act because it would harm cable systems and public access. We have Ed from Vienna is back. I understand you want to make another comment. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, the comment is this. All these claims about developing by private enterprise, it is true that originally it was an academic network and it was done with the Defense Department. But the Internet as we know it today owes really its development to the CERN in Europe. That's the nuclear research organization that's got the big toroid between Switzerland and France. Those were the people who developed most of the things for it today. And that was an international effort by government people.
Ed, thank you
very
much.
Not by private enterprise. And by the way, he talks about the competition will arrive to serve everybody. If you have competitiveness, if there's a need, it will be served. Tell that to the 40 million people who don't have medical insurance. Where's the competition that's come up to serve them?
Ed, you make a couple excellent points. I want to thank you very much for your call. One is, I'm glad he gave me the segue to the international question that I was going to ask before. And I'll get to your second point, Ed, I promise, because it's a good one. But his first point, my understanding is that those governments that have chosen a regulatory regime have all adopted net neutrality. Is that right, Lauren? That England and some other countries have actually enforced this?
I think that what happens in the U.S. telecommunications debate is going to impact what happens in Europe and in other countries. And yes, right now, network neutrality has been maintained. I think in many cases, these countries, Germany, for example, has followed the U.S. model. I worry what might happen worldwide if net neutrality isn't preserved in the United States.
Scott, what about international experience?
Well, I think internationally, I don't think any other country has as supportive a pro-competition policy or has licensed enough spectrum to enough people to have wireless be a competitive force. And so I think that most countries around the world, the large industrialized countries, haven't embraced competition policy as much, and they tend to have a little heavier hand on the regulations.
Scott, let me go to Ed's second point, because I think it's a good one. There wasn't electricity in all places in America until the Rural Electrification Program, which was part of Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. The electric companies provided service, of course, to New York City, to Washington, D.C., but if you lived in the Shenandoah Valley, it just wasn't feasible to provide you. Lauren talked about the fact that some people can get DirecTV, other people in rural areas cannot. Isn't there a fear that since companies' role is their bottom line, their goal is to make the biggest profit, that's why they're in existence, that they're not going to serve the people the way the government, which might look out for people who, let's face it, it may be too expensive to get broadband out to a certain area. The government can make sure it can happen, and a company might not have that interest. How do you address that?
Well, I think if you take an assumption of what it was in the past and you put past technology to today's problems, of course you won't have a fix. What's extraordinary and what's fueling my optimism on competition is the ever-decreasing price of microchips and the power of microchips. For example, in 1907, a microchip could do 2,500 calculations. It can do a billion calculations right now. Now, what that is doing is it allowing all sorts of technologies, radio technologies, wireless technologies, satellite,
I understand. We're running out of time, but Ed's point is that just with medical care, that just because you can serve everyone doesn't mean that everyone will be served. Corporations, Lauren, isn't that their bottom line?
Yeah, this is a part of the COPE bill that we're concerned about. It's the build-out provision, and you're right. In terms of individuals having universal access, say, to like the telephone, we ask telephone companies to chip into the universal fund so that people in rural, remote places. The parallel story here on broadband is you have people in rural areas don't access, aren't provided with commercial broadband that are trying to develop their own community-based broadband networks to serve them, because the business models right now for some of the largest broadband providers don't take into account low-income or rural areas.
We're down to 30 seconds. It's been a terrific debate. Let me just ask you, 15 seconds each, what do you predict will happen in the future? This bill's probably going to come to the floor next week. What's going to happen, Scott?
Well, I don't think you will see net neutrality provisions find their way into law or find their way into regulation.
Think the COPE bill will be defeated?
I don't think the COPE bill will be able to get through both houses of Congress in the short time allowed.
Lauren, what's your prediction?
I agree with him. I don't think that the COPE bill will make it through. I don't think it'll make it out. And I hope that we're not going to see that bill or some version of the bill pass in this congressional year.
Folks, this is an issue for the future. This may be the first time you've heard of it. Think back to the first time you heard about the Internet and you thought, what is this thing? And it started to take over your life. Well, this issue will come up again. You may just be learning about it now, but it's going to come up in all kinds of various forms. Who should control the Internet? Think about it. This is Mark Levine, signing off.